Welcome to the Friday News Roundup on CAI. I'm Catherine Ident in for Steve Junker. We're going to spend the next hour discussing the week's stories from around the Cape, the coast, and the islands with reporters and editors from around the region. Joining us a little later this morning will be George Brennan of the Martha's Vineyard Times, Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle, Marianne Bragg of the Provincetown Banner, CAI Statehouse reporter Mike Dean, Noah Asimo of the Vineyard Gazette, and CAI's environmental reporter Eve Zuckoff. Joining us now are CAI reporters Jeanette Barnes and Sam Houghton with a look at the top stories of the week. Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, Catherine. Good to be here.
Glad to have you both with us this morning. Jeanette, I'd like to start with you. You know, we started the week with news that not only does Massachusetts lead the nation with cases of the P1 variant of COVID-19, that variant was first detected in Brazil, the Cape has the biggest cluster, at least as of at the beginning of this week, of those cases.
That's right. So those P1 variant numbers have gone up in some states over the course of the week, and now Florida and Massachusetts have very similar counts. But within Massachusetts, and again, as of our report earlier this week, Cape Cod had 88% of all the P1 variant cases in the state. It was 50 out of 57 cases at the time. So the Cape is definitely a red flag area for that. And another variant that's widespread in Massachusetts is the one first detected in the UK. That's called B117. That's continuing to rise as well. And Massachusetts is the fourth highest state nationally for that one. Both of these are believed to spread more easily than the dominant COVID-19 virus.
And Jeanette, there were some questions about whether or not rapid tests, COVID tests, or any COVID test at this point, are equipped to detect these variants. Is that the case? What have you learned about that?
Yeah, we did report this week that COVID tests should have no trouble picking up the variants. So that is a bit of a small comfort there. And that comes from a Harvard epidemiologist, Dr. Michael Minna. He said that even the rapid tests should be okay for variants because they don't test for the parts of the virus that are likely to mutate, right? So the parts that want to mutate, if you will, are the ones that our immune systems attack. And that's not what the tests are checking for.
Ah, okay. That's interesting. Sam, we heard news this week about the variants, as we were just talking about. And this amid the fact that the Cape had recorded higher COVID cases as compared to the rest of the state last week and into this week. What about the islands? Are they seeing a surge as well?
Yeah, the last 2 weeks have been particularly high numbers on Martha's Vineyard. Even the highest jump in a week we've seen since the beginning of the pandemic. Health agents counted 101 cases over last week. And hospital officials there are concerned. They say the uptick in cases is, you know, likely tied to these variants that we were seeing on the Cape, but they're still kind of figuring out how widespread the variants are. On the Vineyard, they actually have not been able to confirm that the variant is there, at least as of Wednesday. But they're working with the state to basically sample patients that have recently tested positive for COVID-19. So like the Cape, they actually have to send those samples to the state to find out if the variant is present, and that can take some time. But they say it's safe to assume, based on how rapid this rise in cases has been, that the variant is present.
Mm-hmm. So that's the Vineyard. What about Nantucket? Are there variants there? Is that confirmed?
Yeah, well, the health department there, yes, they did confirm the variant that originated in the UK is on the island, but they're still working with the state to figure out what other variants there are there. They assume that at least the variant that originated in Brazil is on the island. And judging by the town's sewer data, they can actually predict that within the next week that they'll be recording 20 new cases every day. And that's actually similar to a surge in cases that started in November. So concerning there, hospital officials, they actually say that patients that have been admitted with COVID are actually sicker than they have seen in the past. They actually had a death on the island this week from COVID-19. That's the first since December. This came up at a recent select board meeting. They're concerned about this surge not abating as we head into the summer season. When you have more people on the island, there's a fear that if, you know, not enough islanders are vaccinated, that could be a big problem.
So some worries about the future. The summer is, you know, a little ways off, but it is also at the same time fast approaching. Sam, how about some good news as we continue to talk about COVID? You've been reporting on how well the Cape and Islands have been doing in terms of getting shots into arms. In fact, the Cape and Islands are ahead of the state when it comes to getting out the COVID-19 vaccine in terms of the percentage of population. Is that still the case this week? The numbers just came out. They come out weekly.
Yeah, this, the state came out with a weekly report yesterday, and yes, the Cape and Islands are still doing better than the rest of the state. 50% of the Cape is actually fully vaccinated, so has received at least one vaccine. So every other resident on the islands, it's a little less, about 45% of the population, so still pretty high. For people that are fully vaccinated, Martha's Vineyard is actually leading the rest of the state with 35%. Cape and Nantucket are not far behind that. Should also mention that at the state level, we passed the benchmark this week. More than 1.5 million people are actually fully vaccinated now.
And that is, of course, as the state continues to roll out its vaccine plan, with more people become eligible, at least for this week. And then the whole pool will open up to everybody 16 and up in a few weeks. Sam, you did report this week that officials on the islands are pushing for more COVID-19 vaccine doses. I'm thinking there's got to be a tie with the approach of summer here as well. Is that the case?
Yeah, definitely with the summer coming. But also, the federal government has distributed a lot of its doses through CVS and Walgreens. You've probably heard the Biden administration say that 90% of Americans live within 5 minutes of one of those pharmacies. But obviously that's not the case on the Vineyard. There's no CVS or Walgreens. The hospital is kind of the main spot. So they're asking the federal government to give them more doses. And then on Nantucket, some discouraging news here. They were expecting kind of a bigger shipment of doses in the coming weeks with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But because of that production error that everyone's probably heard in Baltimore, you know, 15 million doses were compromised. They aren't getting the doses they were expecting. It sounds like they won't be getting less vaccine than that they have been, just not more. And health officials there, you know, they're saying this would have helped a lot in getting the island completely vaccinated before the summer.
Jeanette, the Johnson & Johnson mishap at the facility in Maryland was, of course, national news because millions of COVID-19 vaccine doses were spoiled. Are Cape officials rethinking plans like officials are on Nantucket? Are there fewer doses coming to the Cape for Johnson & Johnson? And is that going to, you know, kind of put a kink in the plans, so to speak?
Well, there may be fewer doses, but it's not really going to put much of a kink in the plans on the Cape. Local officials on the Cape are saying they won't see much effect because Cape Cod actually gets relatively few Johnson & Johnson doses. The county-run clinics get mostly Pfizer. Senator Julian Sear, who's the spokesman for the Cape COVID Task Force, says the community health centers have gotten some J&J vaccines, but they've been prioritizing those for people who are homebound. They have kind of a homebound program that's coordinated with the towns to vaccinate those folks. But a lot of the vaccinating of the homebound is actually already done.
Yeah, a successful program. They were able to kind of get that done fairly quickly, considering we haven't had access to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine for that long.
Right.
And like Nantucket, Jeanette, our Cape officials, they're thinking about summer. They must be, right? And the crush of visitors and what that's going to mean, because, you know, we're getting more people vaccinated, but the pandemic, of course, continues into a second summer season.
Yes. Yes. Wendy Northcross, who's the CEO of the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce, she says bookings remain strong, and she hasn't seen any sign of people canceling reservations because of the spike in COVID-19 on the Cape over the last couple of weeks. So she says clearly that's a good sign for the summer business, but it does leave businesses with a real need for more workers. And that is a big question. She's encouraging people who may have been unemployed during the pandemic and getting unemployment to consider returning to the workforce before the summer arrives to kind of help out actually with this. Housing costs, as we know, are still a big issue on the Cape, but she does point out some employers offer summer housing.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling we're going to be looking more at the employment situation in the coming weeks as more and more businesses gear back up, not just the seasonal businesses, but other businesses that may have wound down a little bit because of the pandemic, now that we're reopening and so many more people are expected to come down to this region.
Mm-hmm.
Jeanette, you reported on two separate initiatives to get vaccines to people this week. I want to talk about a mobile vaccine van on the South Coast. What's going on there?
Yeah, so the Immigrants Assistance Center in New Bedford has been asking for a while to have some kind of a mobile vaccination van go to the ethnic churches in the city to try to reach people who may not speak a lot of English or may not drive or just may not really trust that the vaccine is a good idea unless they see people in the church community or their own community getting it. And so that actually started this week. The van from South Coast Health went on Tuesday to Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church, which is a predominantly Portuguese Catholic church in New Bedford. And Helena da Silva Hughes, the director of the Immigrants Assistance Center, says she's hoping the van will be able to go to other churches soon, including churches that serve Spanish speakers and the Cape Verdean community in New Bedford as well. Important to point out, though, the van is still appointment only, though, and the Immigrants Assistance Center so far has been handling the appointments for the church visits. So folks can't just, you know, if you see it in your neighborhood, you can't just go in. But
that's right. And that's a good point to give the Immigrants Assistance Center a call if you're thinking that that mobile van is a good option for you or someone you know. You also went to the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribal Headquarters this week to learn more about how the tribe has been working to vaccinate folks in surrounding communities. And we've been talking a little bit about this in different stories over the last few months. So what's the latest?
Right. Well, the Mashpee tribe, as we know, has been receiving vaccine directly from the federal government. And they said they have enough to meet their own needs for tribal members, all tribal members 16 and up. And so now they've offered it to teachers in three towns, Mashpee, Barnstable, and Falmouth. The CEO of the Indian Health Service office there, Rita Gonzalez, says kind of the thinking behind choosing those communities is it helps protect children who are members of the tribe and attend school in those towns. They are also sending 870 doses to the Aquinawampanoag on Martha's Vineyard. Now they were asked how many of their own Mashpee tribal members have been vaccinated by the tribe. And they said it's actually only about 30%. But the tribe's emergency management director, Nelson Andrews Jr., said one big reason for that is that just like an extended family, really, people who are members of the tribe don't necessarily live in this immediate area. So they may be getting vaccinated somewhere else.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, they're spread out and they can come, of course, to the tribe headquarters. But if you're living far away across the country, that may not be a feasible thing for you, even if you are still a tribe member. And U.S. Senator Ed Markey was there as well. He talked a little bit about some federal funding.
Yes. Yeah. He made some stops in the area this week, as other members of Congress have as well. He went to the Mashpee government building to talk about what's in the stimulus bill, and it includes $31 billion for tribal governments and various indigenous programs.
And we are talking with CAI reporter Jeanette Barnes and Sam Houghton. Jeanette and Sam, hang out. We're going to go to a break, and we'll be back with more top stories from around the region on our weekly news roundup. Welcome back to CAI's Weekly News Roundup. I'm Catherine Ident in for Steve Junker. And with us right now is CAI reporter Sam Houghton and Jeanette Barnes. Jeanette, the school scene changed quite a bit this last week. Kids in grades K through 5 went back to school statewide for full-time in-person learning. And it seems that for the most part, things were pretty smooth. We didn't hear any major stories of, you know, any debacles. You checked in earlier this week to see how things were going in Sandwich.
Yes. So in Sandwich, students all the way up through grade 6 went back because sixth graders are in the same building with the younger students. I talked with the superintendent there, Pam Gould, and she said it's this full-time in-person return is doable at the elementary schools because they have room to social distance. But at least in Sandwich, that's really not as true in the high school building, which also houses the middle school in Sandwich. So the state has, of course, reduced the minimum spacing to 3 feet between students. But Gould said kind of the catch there is that if a student tests positive, anyone within 6 feet of that person has to quarantine. So, you know, she says if they have someone who has to quarantine, and that's creates kind of a disruption with a lot of quarantining every time that happens, she's wondering, you know, especially with the spike on the Cape right now, is that really better than what they've been doing? Right. So if they have these big groups of kids going out to quarantine. So she said she was considering applying for a waiver from the state, which you can do, to delay the return for grades 7 and 8. Those waiver applications for middle school are due Monday at 5. So time to decide for every district on that. They don't need waivers right now for grades 9 through 12 because the state has not set a formal return date for high school. So right now, middle school is kind of in the hot seat, everyone figuring out what to do next.
Right. And I imagine that next week after the deadline for this application to apply for a waiver with the state, we'll see other school districts around the state who've been grappling with similar issues with physical space and also the way they've configured their districts. Like, as you said, in Sandwich, 7th and 8th graders are in the high school building. They have their own kind of section, but they're still in this building where the setup may not be the same as it is in the elementary school. So it certainly, I imagine, is quite a test of school districts' flexibility and just ability to house everybody in the safest way possible. I want to switch now to some non-COVID news. And that's the story you did this week, Sam, about the liquor industry. It's in Mashpee pushing against a nip ban that will be going into effect in a few months.
Yeah. So liquor stores in Mashpee, their managers and employees and some local distributors, they all teamed up for a town-wide cleanup. They met at the library and then spread out to the rest of the town from there. From all reports, even those in favor of this nip ban, they say that a lot of people showed up and collected a lot of trash. So just a little background here. The select board passed this ban months ago, and it's expected to go into effect in July. But they did say if some, you know, alternatives were proposed, they would at least consider lifting the ban. The distributor I talked to who helped organize this cleanup, he says that prompted stores to kind of get involved and work together. 35% of his business is nips, so it's a big deal for him, and I think for a lot of liquor stores. Now, I also talked to a selectman after this cleanup, John Cotton. He was kind of a mover and shaker behind this nip ban. He says he's grateful for the cleanup and the effort, but one cleanup, you know, isn't going to be enough to overturn the ban for him. He did say, though, maybe they would consider revisiting if this kind of 5-cent deposit on nips is passed the state legislature. That is a bill under consideration, but it's been delayed for quite a bit, and there's no real indication that it's going anywhere. So it doesn't seem like, you know, this ban in Mashpee is going anywhere come July.
And Sam, we heard news this morning that Yarmouth, the police department there, is in favor of using body cameras. We've been hearing about this across the state as communities consider this type of equipment. Why is Yarmouth more interested in body cameras now?
Yeah, it has become more popular. Departments across the state and the Cape are looking at it. Mashpee is currently the only town on the Cape that has started to use it, but there's definitely interest in other communities. Right, in Yarmouth, Chief Frank Fredrickson, he approached the select board this week saying that he wanted to give all his officers in the department body cameras. In Mashpee, it's just a pilot program at this point. And Fredrickson specifically mentioned the new police reform bill that Governor Baker recently signed into law. The bill has really made the whole police more accountable, and we saw that come about after the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Fredrickson, you know, says this will hold officers more accountable, but it will also help them collect their own evidence if a case is brought against a police officer. The body cameras, he's saying, a lot of citizens are taking videos of police officers on their own, But he's saying it's important that police have their own evidence in these cases as well. I think it's also interesting that the chief says there is, you know, broad support for the cameras among his police officers.
All right. Well, thank you for that reporting, Sam. Jeanette, I just want to turn back to you really briefly. Each week, the state releases quite a bit of data ranging from case numbers to vaccine data and all sorts of stuff. And you took a look at the latest number of cases around the region. What did you see?
Yeah. So as we know, Cape Cod had been the highest in the state, the highest county in the state for the daily incidence rate. But last night, the sort of late breaking stuff Thursday afternoon, Dukes and Nantucket counties, which the state counts together, surged higher than the Cape by a pretty significant amount. So their daily case rate is now 66, whereas the Cape is still at 40.
All right. So we are keeping a close eye, as officials are around the region, as COVID cases we're having a little bit of a spike right now. And that is Jeanette Barnes, CAI's lead reporter, along with reporter and Morning Edition producer Sam Houghton. Thank you so much for joining us and for your work this week.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I want to turn now to some news out of Martha's Vineyard. And joining us to talk about this is George Brennan, news editor of the Martha's Vineyard Times. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Katie. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you with us this morning. George, things got a little tense this week at a virtual meeting to discuss streetscape plans in Oak Bluff, specifically over the idea of parallel parking.
Yes, parallel parking. Everyone dreads parallel parking, right? You might not know this, but you're talking to one of the better parallel parkers I know.
Oh, those are bragging words there. We'll see it in action.
Circuit Ave, as folks know, is diagonal parking right now. But the sidewalks on Circuit Ave are very narrow. And part of the whole streetscape plan is to try and find a way to make the sidewalks wider, make it more pedestrian friendly. And the way to do that is to take away some of the diagonal parking and make parallel parking there. That has prompted not only reaction at that meeting, but we're getting inundated with comments on the story from folks who are saying people just, you know, they learn enough parallel parking to get their license. And then once they do that, it seems like they lose any knowledge that they had. And it just is time consuming. In some cases, people take up too many spots because, you know, they go over the line and, you know, the next person in can't squeeze their car in. So there are all kinds of issues that people are bringing up with parallel parking. It seems like a non-starter for folks, at least in our comments and who were at that meeting. But, you know, otherwise there's no real way to fix the issues that they have because, you know, they're not going to take down buildings and start all over again. So, other things that have been floated, at least in comments, is shutting the street down completely and creating parking somewhere else. And not a bad idea, actually, to, you know, create a parking area or use an existing one that doesn't get used in the off season. I mean, in the season, because like a school parking lot, for example, and running some sort of a trolley service back and forth. So it's interesting that it's generating some ideas and sparking some conversation. Nothing like parallel parking to get people talking.
That's right. Get people all heated up. You know, George, you've got a nice story this week about a high school class that's embarking on a new business venture. I love that, the word embarking in this story, because this is about dog treats.
Absolutely. I just love this story. Maybe it's because I'm a new dog owner, you know, one-year-old puppy here who loves her treats. But this Voyager program at Martha's Vineyard Regional High School, which is a special needs program for students ages 18 to 21, have taken to making Purple Paws dog treats. And these are packaged up and ready to go for your dog. And they're getting lots of orders at the school. And you know, people are just thrilled to help out with this. It's Martha's Vineyard is definitely a dog-friendly place, mm-hmm. and You know, nothing warms the heart more than someone treating dogs well, and that's certainly what these students are doing. And they're learning a lesson in how to put together a business and a product at the same time.
Yeah, a lot of lessons, I would imagine, because there's so many different elements from marketing and getting the word out and getting orders completed to actually making the products themselves. What a cool project.
Absolutely.
That's George Brennan, news editor of the Martha's Vineyard Times. George, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Anyone who's tried to get a COVID-19 vaccine appointment knows you need a few things: a good internet connection, time, and a whole lot of patience. Tim Wood, editor of the Cape Cod Chronicle, joins us now with the story of a Harwich woman who's become a vaccine hunter to help some of her neighbors. Morning, Tim. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. We're talking about Kate Steele here,
a Harwich
resident. She actually, she's on leave from a job at the Outer Cape Health Services. So she had a bit of time on her hands. And when her husband, who is a teacher, and mother-in-law, who was also a teacher, they needed help in booking appointments to get a COVID vaccine. She decided that she would take on that task, and she found that she had a skill for doing this. And since then, other teachers and several elderly folks that she knew asked for help, and she took on that task. And so she's kind of been known locally as you said, the vaccine hunter. She's was able to leverage social media and connections that she had with other quote-unquote vaccine hunters to learn how to navigate the system. And like you said, Catherine, it can be difficult in the sense that it takes a lot of perseverance and you have to be pretty computer savvy to do it. As of this week, she's helped over 30 people, 35 or 40 people, secure appointments. Often she ends up sitting in front of her computers in the wee hour of the morning. Which is when a number of those appointments are released. She's found, for instance, that some of the local pharmacies are the easiest places to book appointments. And interestingly, she said the Massachusetts state website is not easy, and she can understand why people are really having trouble, even if they are computer savvy. It's a pretty complex system. She says she's on par with helping about 10 people a day, even while she's taking care of her two young children. And she doesn't accept any payment for this. She says she's just doing it because she can, and she knows that it's helping people.
Wow, that is a lot of dedication, and interesting to hear a little bit about her strategy and what seems to be easier to navigate. Those are helpful tips there with her saying CVS, Walgreens, those might be a little bit easier to try to get an appointment at this point. And also, I guess, being a night owl is another good thing.
I think that helps.
Yeah.
I think that helps. If you're okay with sitting in front of your computer at 1 or 2 in the morning, then you have a better chance.
And you have another story this week, and this one also about a high school student making an impact. Tell us about Christy Beckley. She wants to protect beaches. She's concerned about climate change.
Yeah, Christy, she's a Monomoy High School sophomore. She loves the beaches here in her hometown of Chatham, and she wants them to be around. So she went to the Park and Rec Commission recently, and suggested that the town institute a surcharge on beach fees to help pay for improvements or repairs to beaches to resist rising water that are anticipated with climate change. Now, she is a member of the Cape Cod Commission's Climate Ambassador Program, and that includes high school students from around the Cape, and they each take on a creative way to try to combat or highlight climate change and impacts from climate change. And she decided to focus on the beaches, noting recent erosion here in Chatham and elsewhere on the Cape, and predictions that will only grow worse as sea level rise continues in response to the warming climate.
Mm.
She asked the commission to consider a beach protection fee of perhaps 5% increase in beach fees that would generate around $25,000 a year, which could be used to repair storm damage or plant beach grass and maybe protect salt marshes, those type of activities. And town officials were intrigued by the idea, and they asked Christy to try to connect with others doing climate change work and to flesh out her proposal a little bit. But they didn't turn her down immediately. It's too late, they said, to consider it for this year because the beach stickers are already printed and they're set to go. But they said that they're willing to keep working on this and maybe implement it in the future.
Awesome. Well, what a neat idea. And we'll have to keep track of that and see if this does actually come to fruition. That's Tim Wood, editor of the Cape Cod Chronicle. Tim, thanks a lot for joining us. Have a great weekend.
You too, Catherine. Thanks very much.
Fishermen, of course, have not been immune to the hardships brought on by this ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. And one fisherman is fighting what he says is his right to a dock slip for his fishing boat at the Provincetown Pier. Marianne Bragg joins us now, editor of the Provincetown Banner, to talk more about this story. Good morning, Marianne.
Hey, Catherine. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. This is a complicated story. Can you kind of set it up for us? Help us understand what's going on here. There's multiple kind of legal angles going on here.
Right. So this is at the town-owned fishing pier, McMillan Pier, in downtown Provincetown. It's operated not by the town specifically, but by a public corporation. And they've been in place for like 20 years. But last year, as part of, an attempt to start to improve the adherence to harbor regulations, the pier corporation's board and the pier manager started to look at reclassifying fishermen based on their landings. And that essentially meant that fishermen either, were allowed to continue to dock their boat right at the pier, or they were allowed to stay there, but they had to pay extra fees, or they were basically told they had to put their boat on a mooring. So this affected about 6 fishermen who had been kind of longstanding fishermen, able to dock their boat at the pier. And a few have appealed the decision. A couple have basically given up. But one fisherman in particular, David Flattery, has continued on with a three-pronged legal approach.
And he's saying that in part, right, that the pier's mission was originally to benefit fishermen, right, the fishing vessels, and that maybe the timing of reclassifying these boats wasn't very good, given that COVID really was something they couldn't control when they had to reduce their fishing trips.
Right, that's true. I mean, the bigger picture, definitely from his attorney's, presentation, is that the pier corporation somewhat lost their eye, lost their mission, which was primarily, they say, to help, commercial fishermen thrive. So that's definitely their perspective. And there are several different angles, but one of them is definitely that they're, included in all of this at the same time, apart from fishermen being reclassified and then some being told they couldn't keep their boats, at the pier. There's also rate increases that the pier corporation has implemented, that also now those are on hold for a year. But that's also kind of, from the pier corporation's perspective, is they're attempting to increase revenue so that they can maintain the pier for the long term.
So there's a lot going on here with thinking about the future, but also kind of reeling from, so to speak, the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. And of course, this story is on the Provincetown Banner's website, so you can take a closer read and really get an idea of what's going on the Provincetown Pier. Marianne Bragg, editor of the Provincetown Banner, thanks so much for joining us and talking about this story. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And stay with us. We're going to take a look at more vaccine scarcity and what people are doing to get creative to get their shot. That's ahead when we come back. Stay with us. You're listening to CAI's weekly news roundup. I'm Catherine Ident in for Steve Junker. Vaccine scarcity is not a new story in this ongoing pandemic, but a limited supply of doses on the vineyard has inspired some to go off island in search of these coveted appointments. And joining us to talk about this is Vineyard Gazette editor Noah Asimo. Good morning, Noah.
Good morning.
So talk about what's happening with folks getting off island to go get their COVID shot.
Yeah, so as you said, vaccine scarcity is not really news anywhere, but it's sort of a particular issue here. We only have one vaccination site on the island. That's at Martha's Vineyard Hospital. And in recent weeks, most of the vaccine dosage that gets allocated there has been used for people to get second dose shots. And so, you know, higher priority individuals, it's important that they get their second shot. But it means that there's been few appointments for first dose individuals, even as eligibility has expanded. And the way the sign up works at the hospital is that it's done on a first come, first serve online basis. So if you go on and try to sign up either on Monday or Saturday and you don't get it, you're sort of out of luck. There's no way to sort of shop around for different vaccine appointments or anything. And to do that, you have to go off island. So some islanders are, and they're basically resorted to that as a better option than waiting.
Right. But and I heard hospital officials.
Eligible. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I heard hospital officials saying, you know, if you can get an appointment off island to do so, to you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They're suggesting it, they're not suggesting it, but they're encouraging it if people are frustrated with the process here. You know, they just want people to get vaccinated and to do as many as we can as we possibly can. But, of course, it's sort of an issue. I mean, this is happening at the same time that the CDC is advising people still not to travel at all. And, you know, the way the state's vaccination process works is there might be an appointment that becomes available in Provincetown. There's one that might become available in Western Massachusetts. And so for islanders, you know, if we talked to a few of them who have actually gone off island to get a vaccine shot, you know, they're willing to go anywhere. Almost sometimes it doesn't make a difference. But, you know, people have said, hey, I'm going to look and try and get one at the CVS in Falmouth. And people are doing that. They sort of are seeing each other on the boat. We talked to the Steamship Authority. They actually recently added a policy that qualifies vaccine appointments as medical appointments. Which essentially just means that you get booking preference. And they said that about 50 people last week did that. And so the number's likely much higher as to how many have actually been going off. Those are just people who are asking to qualify as a medical appointment.
That's right. One way to get at the picture of this, yeah.
Right. And so you're getting we can't really get a full sense of the number, but it's definitely significant. And, you know, it kind of just goes to show, like, the federal vaccine distribution policy. I didn't know this, but it's kind of interesting that a large portion of vaccines are going to just be allocated to CVS and Walgreens as part of the Biden administration's goal to get a vaccine within 5 miles of everyone in the country. Mm. But there's no Walgreens or pharmacy on, you know, Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket. And we're further than 5 miles from the mainland.
Yes.
But, you know,
yeah.
45-minute ferry ride.
That's right. Yeah, it shows. It really shows how, you know, these blanket kind of orders from the president don't always fit.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Exactly.
That's an interesting story. Noah, just briefly, you also have a story about a diner closing that is a popular restaurant and a popular read on your website.
Yes, definitely. So the Right Fork Diner, familiar to seasonal year-round residents and aviation buffs, because it's located at the historic Katama Airfield, is not going to be reopening its doors this summer after 15 years in business. The owner confirmed the decision. She said it was tough. Essentially, the way the property works is that it's owned by the town, and then the Katama Airfield Commission acts as landlord, and they submitted or they opened a new RFP for the property, and the owner's not going to submit a bid, which is too bad. The diner has a long sort of cool history, and, you know, it's become a really popular spot over the years, not just for summer and seasonal residents, aviation buffs. It's a really cool place to go watch planes come into part. Our reporter, Maya Coleman, said it's known for offering breakfast in a show. I think that's pretty accurate. talking to the landlord, or the owner of the restaurant, she said it's not the end for Right Fork Diner. She's hoping to try and operate out of a space in downtown Edgartown this summer as she looks for a long-term space. And then also there were other island businesses that submitted bids for the RFP that include the owners of Backyard Taco, Little House Cafe, and Edgartown Diner, for anyone who's familiar with those spots.
Right.
So it sounds like there will be a restaurant there. It's just not going to be Right Fork Diner anymore.
All right. And if you want to read more about that story, you can check out the Vineyard Gazette editor, Noah Asimo. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Gavin.
The COVID-19 vaccination pool, as we know, got a little bigger this week. A new group of people became eligible to book a vaccine appointment, and that group includes Governor Charlie Baker, who got his first shot. And I talked about this and other news with State House reporter Mike Dean. Morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Catherine.
The eligibility pool, as I said, got bigger this week for people to line up for their COVID-19 shot. Who's now eligible to get in line in Massachusetts?
We are all the way up to residents aged 55 and over are now eligible to get the shot. So this is the progressive age groups more and more coming online. And perhaps more significantly in this age cohort, they're also allowing anyone over the age of 16 with one medical condition that would be complicated by the virus. So that's letting in all sorts of people. It's everything from cancer to obesity and a lot of different conditions in between. So that's really opening the door for another 1 million people to get on the lists of eligibility for the shots. So the state has been following the CDC lists of conditions to see what qualifies, and they've been updating that periodically. The state of Massachusetts, though, also includes asthma as one of those conditions. So it's a pretty broad pool, and this means that we're getting closer and closer to that April 19th date where everyone over 16 is going to be eligible regardless of health conditions. And this is in line with what President Biden's been calling for. He wants all adults to be eligible by that time. The thing is, though, with over a million people, you know, coming online here, it means that it's going to be harder, as it has been, to get a shot because of our still fairly limited federal supply. It's a lot more in the last few weeks have been coming in, but still, you add a million to the pool and you're only getting about 300,000 a week, means it's going to take, you know, throughout April and probably into May to get all of these delivered.
Governor Charlie Baker himself made the news this week. That's because he's eligible for his COVID shot and he got an appointment this week.
Yeah, so Baker rolled up his sleeve at the Heinz Convention Center, and he got a Pfizer shot. He said that when he booked the second appointment for the second Pfizer shot, he got 65 text messages. I think that was hyperbole. But his point here was that the pre-registration system worked. His number came up, he booked the appointment, he went down to the Heinz, he got the shot, and he booked the second one. That's the way it should work. He says he felt fine, and even the day after he got the shot, said he still felt good. He waited until his 55 to 65-year-old cohort became eligible. Baker's 64, so he's on the older end of that spectrum there. And he used this as an example just to say that the system works, and he got all the messages, and that this is what people should be using, this pre-registration system that gets you in the door at these max vaccination sites.
Baker also announced the state is adding some of the regional collaboratives to the state's COVID-19 vaccination registration website.
Right. So this is bringing in some of these regional collaboratives that have existed for a while, bringing them into that pre-registration system that Baker just said has been so successful. He's going to include the collaboratives in Western Massachusetts, including the Berkshire County one, and a newer one in Marshfield on the South Shore. So that's going to allow more people to use this pre-registration site. A lot of folks around the South Shore had to go to the Gillette Stadium. That was their closest mass vax site. Now, Marshfield, kind of on the other side of the South Shore, is going to allow for more access there through the pre-reg site. Baker says that the other collaboratives, especially the Barnstable County one on Cape Cod, they're going to have the opportunity to opt into the state registration site later this month. They're working the kinks out on that, but he's really enthusiastic that that's kind of the best marriage of the software of the pre-registration with the access of the regional collaboratives that have been going on. So it means that, you know, if you are on the Cape and you are far from one of the state-run mass vaccination sites, you will be able eventually to sign up for pre-registration through this massive system.
Finally, Mike, it is budget season, and one big thing lawmakers look at when they think about the budget, of course, is revenue. And there was some concern last year that the pandemic shutdowns would hurt what comes into the state. But this week, the State Department of Revenue reported it took in about 15% more than it did last year in March, and it's far more than what officials had expected.
Yeah, it's actually the story of the pandemic in Massachusetts tax collection has been kind of rosy. After an initial, you know, crash last year, things have been kind of on the upkeep, on the uptick. So the Department of Revenue, they took in more than $3 billion in taxes from Mass residents just last month in the month of March. And that's $1.5 billion more than what happened in March 2020. Of course, that was, you know, at the low ebb of the crash. But, you know, state revenues, they really are up for the year. They've been beating benchmarks and expectations every single month. So it looks like it's going to be a lot more comfortable than a lot of these budget writers on Beacon Hill had feared it would. So a lot of the money that's coming in is because the federal COVID relief has been coming into the Commonwealth at a pretty good pace. So we're expected to get more than $5.5 billion in total federal funding. So you pair that with the local revenues that are in decent shape, and it could mean, you know, a fairly decent budget season. The thing is that the priorities for to spend it on have changed so much. That's kind of what they're working on now. But they're saying that actually we could put money back into that rainy day fund that was used to bail out the state budget last year, you know, which it's kind of remarkable because we were, you know, just not long ago talking about using more and more of that. So I think basically what the state want to do right now is use a little bit more of that savings. And then at the end of the year, if there is a surplus because revenues keep going up, they'll actually pay that back into the rainy day fund much earlier than they anticipated.
And that is State House reporter Mike Dean talking with us, as he does most weeks from Boston. Mike, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Falmouth residents will decide next month if a proposal, or actually coming up soon, if a proposal to convert a historic golf course into a solar farm is a project they approve of. CAI's Eve Zukoff took a look at the company making the pitch and some of the questions residents have about the project. Hi, Eve. Thanks for joining us.
Hi there, Catherine.
Eve, tell us about this solar project proposal.
Yeah, so this is a project that's being proposed for Cape Cod Country Club, kind of this historic golf course in Falmouth. And the idea of this international energy company called Amp Energy is to take 140 of the acres, put up 70 acres, do 70 of 140 of those acres covered in solar panels. AMP really likes this project because Eastern Massachusetts, we're so densely populated here. We have these high electricity costs. We also have all these new state goals about renewable energy and carbon emissions. But this is nowhere near a done deal yet. This is going to require a town meeting vote because in order for AMP to build the project the way they want to, the town is going to have to amend two solar siting bylaws. And of course, that's where a lot of the controversy comes in.
That's right. And you set out to learn more about AMP Energy itself. Well, quickly, what did you learn?
Yeah, so this is an international company. They have operations in India, Canada, Japan. They're all over the place, and they've done a number of golf course conversions. They also have said that one thing they really want to focus on is working with the community, and they understand that one of the big concerns for this project is it would be sited right next to Coonamessett Pond. And they say, we know that people like to walk around there. We know that water quality is an issue. We want to fund water quality studies. We want to plant pollinator-friendly plants in the area next to these solar panels. We want to work with you to make this work.
But not everybody's excited about this. There's some concerns because part of this plan is to cut down some trees, acres of trees.
That's right. That's right. Ideally, about 17 acres of trees if these solar siting bylaws are amended. The planning board likes the plan, actually, because the alternative of the golf course is housing, which could have the septic systems, the septic runoff could have a real negative impact on Coonamessett Pond. Again, there are people who are opponents to this project because they say we really shouldn't be cutting down 17 acres of trees to make way for renewable energy. We got to look for other options first, but it's going to be up to residents who vote at town meeting in Falmouth, which is April 12th, so
that's
Monday.
Right. That's right, April 12th, town meeting for those of you in Falmouth. Well, we are out of time. Eve Zukoff, CAI's environmental reporter, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Catherine.
I also want to thank George Brennan of the Martha's Vineyard Times, Marianne Bragg from the Provincetown Banner, Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle, Noah Asimo of the Vineyard Gazette, and CAI reporters Jeanette Barnes, Sam Houghton, and Mike Dean. And thank you for joining us for CAI's Weekly News Roundup. I'm Catherine Ident. Have a great weekend.